the attribution of post-Mosaic authorship for the Torah and to apply large swatches of the Torah to that designation in the name of Ibn Ezra, which is what the Bible critics started to do in the 19th century. He's considered the grandfather of biblical criticism, the father being Baruch Spinoza. So Ibn Ezra himself makes much more clear and precise statements about this fact, rather than this cryptic statement, if you know the secret of the 12, then you'll understand these four psukim and you'll recognize the truth. What does that even mean? Right? The secret of the 12, Baruch Spinoza said, and Shmuel David Lutzato, known as Shadal, took him out on this. He says the secret of the 12 is that at the end of the Torah it says Moshe wrote the Torah on 12 stones. Right? That's what it says in Parshas Kisavo. Right? It doesn't say that Moshe wrote the whole Torah on 12 stones. There are Mamre Chazal that he wrote at Seretz Adibro, so he wrote parts of Sefer Devarim, right? Which made Baruch Spinoza, you know who he is, right? Baruch Spinoza, which made him draw the conclusion that Ibn Ezra, I don't care what Baruch Spinoza says, but I do care what Ibn Ezra says, right? He claims that Ibn Ezra's secret of the 12 is that Ibn Ezra felt that the Torah that Moshe left, Yahushua, was so small that it could fit on 12 small stones. Right? Spinoza agreed. There was a Moses, though he did write some law, but he just left us with very little. It's Ezra, 900 years, 800, 900,000 years later, who wrote the bulk of what's in the law. So that was Spinoza's secret of the 12. Now, we know what the secret of the 12 is. Can you remember that? That is on the test. In a half hour. Right. That's not just the last eight psukim that Moshe didn't write, which is a Tana statement. Right? Two Tanoim in the Gemara and Baba Basra say this. All right? And the Stam the Brisa said Yehoshua Kosav Sifro Vishmona Psukim Shabbatora. Right? And then the Gemara afterwards says, wait a second, that's a machlokis. Okay, got it? All right? So the secret of the 12 is obvious. That Ibn Ezra says that a Tana said eight. And Krinsky, the notes, that's the Karnior. Krinsky writes that seems to be the same opinion as the Tana. We disagree with that. We know the Tana knows the difference between 8 and 12. Right? What Krinsky should have said was, this is based on the logic of the Tana that says that Moshe couldn't write the last 8 psukim. Instead of saying, this is Rabbi Yehuda Bitaim Rabbi Nechemiah. Right? Remember that? Okay, so Ibn Ezra, listen to this pasuk, since you asked.
Yeah.
Ibn Ezra says, it's not on the test though, that there's a pasuk that says, these are the kings who ruled in Edom. You want to tell me where this parsha is? What parsha this is in? These are the kings who ruled in Edom before any king ruled in Israel. Ve'ilaham lochim asher molchu be'eretz Edom lifnei moloch melech al Yisrael. It's in Vayishlach, right? When Yaakov comes home, right? It mentions Esav's families. So it says these are the kings who ruled in Edom. Esav ruled Edom, right? Before any king ruled in Israel. Now that seems to be anachronistic, right? You understand? Where would you think that a pasuk like this should be? At least after. At least after. A king ruled in Israel. You understand? Right? You got these are the kings who ruled in Edom before any king ruled in Israel. Ibn Ezra on that pasuk is explicit and clear. He quotes a man by the name of Yitzchak, who says this pasuk was inserted in the times of the kings. Got it? That seems to be based on the same logic as saying the last 12 psukim couldn't be written by Moshe. Right? Ibn Ezra on that pasuk quotes a man named Yitzchak, who says this pasuk was inserted at the time of the kings, and he says, I know why his name is Yitzchak. Everybody who reads his words laughs at it. His book should be burned, and he should be burned for saying this. Ibn Ezra was explicit and harsh with his opponents, right? So that's his last two questions. How could the person who wrote this, Spinoza, of course, doesn't deal with this. He could just as easily say that Ibn Ezra on Bereishis 36:31 is a forgery, right? Okay, but and again, I don't care what Baruch Spinoza says. He was a fraud when it comes to biblical parshanut and authorship. But I do care what Ibn Ezra says, right? Okay, so look, does Ibn Ezra have to roll over in his grave because he is considered by the biblical critical world to be the grandfather of biblical criticism? What can I say? And let the chips fall where they may. Whether he meant to say it or not, I don't know, is his problem. Okay? All right, that's the end of that. Okay, so now what we are doing is what we call Mizrach HaTichon, the ancient Near East. Okay, the assumption of... is anybody here in this class in my engagements class? Oh, okay. Well, one of the weeks in my engagements class is, it's a unit 4, it's Challenges of Science and Medicine. Right? Most of the time I think I spent on medicine, but these are issues that come up in any discussion of Torah Umada and the study of Tanakh. So there's I'll just read you the cover page on that part of unit 4. It says, Understanding Tanakh Through the Eyes of the Ancient Near East. In other words, we're living in about the year 2000, and we're reading a text that's 3,000 years old. There are not too many people left on planet Earth who are doing anything like that. We're studying each and every day a 3,000-plus-year-old text, and its interpretation from a 2,000-year-old text. Right? The Mishnah and the Talmud and the Midrash Halacha. Right? So who's doing that? Right? People want to study what's written now in the last 5 years. You're not reading 200-year-old math textbooks. Certainly not 100-year-old science textbooks. Right? Okay, but that's clearly a difference. Everybody knows when it comes to that, you do science and then how to do surgery, you want to read what was written yesterday. But when it comes to ethics and morality, which is what this is all about, yeah, I do want to hear what they said 3,000 years ago. Okay. Many cryptic words, esoteric prophecies, and confounding stories in Tanakh can be elucidated with knowledge of contemporary events in the ancient Near East. If I know, based on archaeological findings, how the Yavusi fought, right, this may shed light on a very cryptic story in Shmuel Bet, Perek He, involving blind and lame, crippled, if you remember the Spangled Bell, in the conquest of Yerushalayim. At the end of the story, David says, I hate the blind and the lame. Don't ever bring them to my house. Right? So knowledge of how certain people conduct battle, right, might be helpful in understanding these cryptic passages. Right? Okay, before the break, we discussed this in terms of philology. Right? In terms of the meaning of the words. Last class we talked about the word Alma in Hebrew. And I don't think this class needs much convincing that it is perfectly appropriate to use parallel Semitic languages to help understand biblical Hebrew words, right? Right. If I can show you that in Akkadian, that's a nation that's mentioned in this week's parsha, Akkad. Whether it's just good luck or good fortune, this nation, which you've probably never heard of before, because you just glanced over that reference in Parshas Noach, right? That's the only place it's mentioned in the Torah. That this nation has left us such a treasure trove of material. It could be just luck. It could be the guys next door in a flood or in an earthquake. All their whole library just disappeared into the ground, and we would have had more from Ugarit Okay. So, but they have left us so much material that a professor here at Yeshiva University about 20 years ago created a full lexicon of every word that appears in all of Akkadian. It's a huge, thick book. I helped him work on it. I worked on letter Chof. Every Akkadian word that appears in all these findings that starts with the letter Chof, I worked on. His name is Professor Chaim Talmil. I believe he still teaches here. And, all right, this thing, look, I believe there is a lexicon as thick as about 700 pages on Klingon, right? You know how they made it? They used every single Star Trek episode where Klingon is spoken, and there's plenty of it, right? And they created a dictionary and a lexicon out of it with conjugation, right? Who on earth had the time to do this, right? Do you even know what I'm talking about here? Okay, I mean, I don't know. The Romulans also spoke a language, but I guess it not as much as Klingon. All right? But all right. Everyone else in Star Trek seems to speak English. I don't know why only the Klingons speak their own language. Okay. Anyway, it says, Rashi routinely used Arabic in order to explain difficult biblical words and phrases. Had Rashi known Ugaritic and Akkadian, he'd have used these languages as well. Shabbos. I don't think I need to convince you of this. In addition, as the Rambam so often did, both in the Mara Nebuchim as well as in the Mishnah Torah, even mitzvos can be elucidated by knowledge of contemporary practices in the ancient world. Right? Anybody have a problem with that? Okay. The Ramban had a big problem with that. Okay. Ramban was very much against the Rambam explaining mitzvahs in the Torah in light of ancient Near Eastern practices, because what is the slippery slope of such explanations? Anybody here? What is the slippery slope of saying we don't eat milk and meat, which the Rambam does say in Shechela Gimel of Mor Nebuchim? We don't eat meat because ancient pagans cooked milk and meat together to show that they dominate the realms of death. Meat is taken from the animal when it's dead. And life, milk is taken from the animal when it's alive. So by cooking these two together and then pouring it over a swatch of crops, we can, a holy section of crops, which signified if this succeeds, our whole land of crops will succeed. So they had this designation whereby our rituals can coerce the gods into following our interests. Our interests here being that we want to control the realms of life and death. Right? Whatever that means. That we can have sway over the dead. Right? This caused the ancients to be consumed with necromancy. Right? Death was a great mystery to them, especially the Egyptians, right? And they were consumed. You know what necromancy is? The Torah refers to necromancer as a balat or baal ov. Ov v'yid oni. You hear that? Ov v'yid oni. It's a seance. When you call back the dead and say, who do you want to call back? Call back Shmuel, right? That's an actual story in Tanakh. Where a woman convinced Shaul HaMelech that she called back Shmuel from the dead. Right? I say it that way because most Mefarshim say she didn't do that. The human being doesn't have the power to do that. She just hypnotized Shaul into thinking that Shmuel was called back from the dead. Right? Okay, that's what most commentaries explain this. Alright, so they were consumed with necromancy. And they would do all kinds of rituals to control it. Get it? Milk and meat. With Gemara in Bechorah says, "Da nechor nasis cholov." Look at the vena cava of a cow. It's blood that, in a process, turns in a certain place of the cow to milk. So, not eating milk and meat. The Rashbam caught this. Rashbam writes this in his Perush. Not cooking milk and meat together is the same reason as not drinking blood. Because the ancients were drinking blood to show that they would slaughter an animal, or a human being for that matter, and quickly take the blood that spurts out of where they slaughtered it. And quickly take out the blood of the human that was just slaughtered and drink it as a mode of communication to the person they just slaughtered. The person slaughtered says, I want to die this way. And as soon as I go, quickly drink the blood and I'll tell you things. And the person would stand there in a seance and start talking in the voice of that person. Right? Okay, and there were priests who were very good at making this look good. This, the Rabban actually mentions this parish, why it says in the Torah, Lo tochlu al hadam. Not lo tochlu dam. That's a separate pasuk. But when the Torah in Parshas Kedoshim refers to not drinking blood, it says Lo tochlu al hadam, which means don't drink on the blood, which is a hint to this kind of seance. Right? So the ancients were consumed with this kind of behavior, so the Torah all over the place warns against it. Rambam says shatnez is connected to this. So what's the danger now, Rosenfield?
The danger is that you're not doing anything for any reason. There's no reason to do it now.
Right. Today.
Today.
That no one is drawing from these rituals. Right. We don't need neighbors eating milk and meat to show this domination. So why shouldn't I eat a cheeseburger? Right? I mean, I'm not making a statement about life and death when I eat a cheeseburger. I'm just enjoying something that tastes good. Why are you keeping this from me? Right? Kachabas, that's exactly what the Reform Movement said 200 years ago. They might even agree with the scholarship that once this was forbidden to us because of such and such a reason. Right? By the way, the Rambam warns us, he tells us in the Mor Nevuchim, but he does this even in the Mishnah Torah, in Hilchos Avodah Zarah. He says, why the Jew has these here? Right? Everybody else was taking haircuts all around the head, right, like this, and rounding off the whole thing. He said, because that's the way their priests wore their hair, so we have to wear our hair otherwise. Right? And he gives the reasons for these things that they were doing. The Torah says, actions shape your character. I don't want the philosophy that you think you can control death by drinking blood, by milk and meat, by whatever else. I don't want you thinking you can do it. I don't want you to do the action that they think makes it happen. Alright? The Orthodox Jew looks at the Torah and says, good, this is good scholarship. It could be right, it could be wrong, but the action must be maintained. Because once you let go of the action, and especially the Sefer Chinuch says this to his son. Sefer Chinuch has written about the mitzvahs of the Torah, explaining them to his 7-year-old son. Right? I'm sure you're familiar with the Sefer Chinuch. Right? So he writes in the mitzvah of not breaking the bones of the Korban Pesach, he says, what does this have to do with our freedom? So he writes that in a long, long detailed discussion about breaking bones of the Korban Pesach, he quotes that topic that Nechama Leibowitz made very famous in an article called Actions Shape Character. Right? Not only about the philosophy of the mitzvahs, the Rambam wrote the Mor Nevuchim for Nevuchim. We needed that. We probably wouldn't call Nevuchim today. We need it too. Right? But every time you just had a meatball, and because of that you're not having a Kit Kat or a piece of ice, or some ice cream, then that you're showing now that you know this, a subconscious connection to why this was given to us in the first place. Other than that, you just say, I'm not eating milk and meat because the Torah says so. Right? Finished. Okay? So it enhances the mitzvah when you know why you're doing it. That's the same. What's the Sefer Chinuch wrote his book. Right? It doesn't mean that to say that this mitzvah was meaningless to you before this or any other mitzvah. Right? But it's enhanced. That's what the Rambam felt. That's what the Sefer Chinuch felt. Okay. So that is the thesis of where we're going, starting next Tuesday. All right. So in your Choveret, it is after the section called Mesorah and Targumim, which is what we did last class, right? Right after that, there is a section called Mizrach HaTichon, or Ancient Near East, right? Okay, in that section, Okay, look to see it. It's right after Tamud. Tanakh in Light of Archaeological Discovery. It's page 40. It's from 40 until... until 48. That is what... make sure to come to the next class with that material. Okay? And then we'll have a segue from there into... the second half of this semester, which is Medrashei Halacha, Medrashei Agada, and then finally, which this is really all about, is how to read text, how to understand what's written in the Pasuk. So we'll do Rashi, Rashbam, Ibn Ezra, Rabban, and the Derech of those Mefarshim. Okay, please clear your desks. You should just have a pencil on your on a pen or pencil. The answers. Yeah.
About Chazal's name for Sefer Bereishis, is it Sefer Yashar or Sefer Yerach?
I would mark.